This is it. We've got an Amex Platinum Pro on our hands, ladies and gentlemen. We haven't seen anyone relax like this before in the Centurion Lounge. Is he connecting to complimentary Wi-Fi? Oh, my. Look at that. He is. And you will not believe where he's going next. The Amex dedicated card member entrance for the win. Unbelievable.
When you get travel perks with Amex Platinum, you're part of the action. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. Whether it's a walk-off grand slam or a base hit to center field. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment. It's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news. Sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
Welcome to the Hardwood Handicappers Podcast.
They're a bunch of guys who ain't never played the game, and they never got the girls in high school, and they just want to get in the game.
With your host, Jonathan Von Tobel.
See, the thing is, you guys look at me, you see the backwards hat, the gray socks, the funky outfit, and you say, now this guy's a chump, am I right?
No, f***ing geek. I'm a geek.
Only on the VSiN Podcast Network.
What up, folks? Welcome in another edition, late Wednesday night recording of the Harvard Handicappers Podcast. A Thursday preview, a look at the Eastern Conference semis up on deck, of course, with Milwaukee and Boston being set. Really quickly, wanted to get something out of the way. Apparently, we've been having some back-end issues, so I don't know if the podcast has been posted the last couple of episodes. Back-end, there were some problems. So, hopefully you're listening to this at this point right now. If not, well then, we'll figure it out at some point, but hopefully these can start getting posted a little bit more regularly. Again, a small issue on the back end, which should be solved at this point right now. So, with that, again, recording this late Wednesday night, so games are just final right now. Milwaukee ends their series with Chicago, gets a 116-100 win, and Golden State ends their series with Denver with a 102-98 win. So, a very good performance from both of the favorites and the higher-seeded teams to win in five and move on. Still a little salty about Milwaukee because we knew that they had them this in them, but wanted to fart around there in game two. So with that, what I really wanted to talk about, and the main chunk of this podcast, is going to be this Eastern Conference semifinals matchup between Milwaukee and Boston. It is now set. Westgate Superbook, first one up on the market. Celtics open up as a $1.75 favorite. Immediately gets bet up to -180 over at the Westgate Superbook when it gets posted. And not surprising, I was texting with Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate Superbook a couple, it was yesterday on Tuesday. But regardless, you know, we were texting back and forth. And for those who don't know, Jeff Sherman is in charge of the making of the odds for both golf and the NBA. Among many other things. Jeff's awesome. At Golf Odds up on Twitter, I'm sure if you were listening to this ridiculous podcast, then you are 99.9% chance that you're following him. But regardless, Giants just lost. That's good for my San Francisco Giants under. Distractions all over the place. So I was texting with him, and you know, I expected this price to be somewhere around -200, maybe even a little bit higher than that, just given the Chris Middleton injury, which of course we will get to, and the improved power rating on a Boston Celtics team. Again, you know, -200, it's a little high, I guess you would think, against the defending champs, an implied probability of 66.7%. So you understand opening it up at the -175 mark. But as we mentioned, the market is in here a little bit on the Boston Celtics. So we'll see where this eventually ends up. But let's take a look at this series at a pretty good look at this series. It's going to get started on May 1st, which is Sunday, But let's look at what we know. Regular season, these two teams split a four-game set. Boston, intriguingly enough, covered all four games. But you look at the four games that these two teams played. Three of the four games took place before 2022, and that's before the scheme changed with Robert Williams, right, moving more off-ball in the defensive schemes, having Horford be the guy who was defending the opposing fives on defense, Robert Williams becoming more of a help defender, and in that regard really improving the defensive output of the Boston Celtics. And so you don't really take a lot out of these games. November 12th, 2021, it was a 112-113 win for Boston. No Giannis, no Middleton, no Brooke Lopez for Milwaukee, no Jaylen Brown for Boston. Hell, Dennis Schroeder was still on the team. December 13th, that was a 117-103 win for Boston. No Brooke Lopez for Milwaukee. Giannis, Middleton, Holiday all played. And the regular starting five for the Celtics, Tatum, Brown, Smart, Horford, Williams. So you can kind of circle and go back to that December 13th matchup. Was it, again, a 117-103 win for Boston. Go back and see some of the things that worked well for either team. I think that would probably be That is the closest that you're going to get between the four among the four regular season matchups as what we're going to get in this series that we're about to unfold, that is about to unfold before us. Because the other two games, they played again in December. DeMarcus Cousins, Grayson Allen were in the starting lineup with Antetokounmpo, Middleton, Holiday. DeMarcus Cousins just got eliminated by the Golden State Warriors because he plays for the Denver Nuggets. No Horford for Boston. Romeo Langford was in the starting lineup. Langford into the season with the Spurs. Jabari Parker and Juancho Hernan Gomez were both playing for the Celtics. In fact, played 12-plus minutes on Christmas. So gives you an idea of where the rosters were at that point. And when they met before the regular season ended, while the Bucks threw out their complete starting unit, Jason Tatum, Al Horford, Robert Williams were all out for Boston. So again, you can't really read too much into the regular season. I would stress that maybe you go back, and I'm going to go back personally and watch the December 13th game, see if you can pull anything from there. But again, that was before the change in terms of the schemes for the Boston Celtics. So as you kind of look at the regular season, when we transition over to what this postseason series is going to look like, the first thing that you start with is, what in the world is the case with Chris Middleton? Like, what's going to happen with Middleton in this series? Adrian Wojnarowski was on NBA Today with Malik Andrews and actually discussed this, and it doesn't sound good for Middleton or the Bucks.
He'll get that reevaluation at the 14-day, two-week point next week. But you know, I'm told that injury is expected to keep him out longer than that. There's not a sense that he's going to get reevaluated at 2 weeks and all of a sudden be back at practice and be ready to play. That's a benchmark in this process. But the Bucks certainly, you know, they're on the cusp of getting by the Bulls here.
Yep.
They may have to get through another series, a conference semifinal, before they may have the opportunity to get Chris Middleton back in this season.
So they have to maybe go through a conference semifinal before getting Middleton back. Obviously, that means this series with Boston, that's not a very good, and as you noted, that was from earlier today. So as we know, the Bulls have been eliminated. But regardless, potentially this entire series without Chris Middleton, that's tough. It's an insanely big loss for the Milwaukee Bucks. Because Middleton, he doesn't get enough credit for how good of a player he is. This year, solid season, 20.1 points on 44% shooting from the floor, 37% from three, 5.5 rebounds, 5.5 assists per game. A good playoff player, 20 points in the postseason, 41% from the floor, 39% from three, 6-5 for in terms of rebounds and assists. So what do we make of Milwaukee without him? Well, first, let's... Thank you, Siri. I don't know where you're getting 6 plus 5, but look at that. That's what you do. I have this new Apple Watch that I've been trying to use and mess with, and still getting the hang of it. I feel like an old man saying that. Regardless, before I was rudely interrupted. So 3 games since the Middleton injury, Bucks have rolled with Drew Holiday, Wes Matthews, Bobby Portis, Giannis Antetokounmpo, and Brooke Lopez as their starting five. That is a unit that did not play a single minute together in the regular season. Cleaning the Glass had them together on the floor for 3 possessions. So we'll call it 0. Against Chicago, 31 minutes for that group. And the returns were good, right? 114.7 on offense in terms of the efficiency rating. Defense, 90.9. That equated to a plus 23.8 net rating. But it's Chicago. It's a team that is thoroughly outmatched in their series with the Milwaukee Bucks. I think the first takeaway when you look at that starting five, not a ton of high-level ball handling with those five out there. And it showed, too, in the assist numbers. They only assisted on 43.4% of their made field goals, a 1.44 assist-to-turnover ratio against Chicago. Those five out there on the floor, according to the NBA tracking data. If you're wondering, that would put you well into dead last in terms of assist rate and assist-to-turnover ratio. And that could be a problem, right? You're facing a Boston team who can force turnovers at a high level. They forced Brooklyn to commit turnovers on 16.1 of their possessions in the first round. And outside of Giannis, not that Middleton really is one, but in their starting five without him, not really true north-south threat that's going to force the issue within 4 feet of the basket, get to the free throw line. And when you look at just the way Boston has been playing, with their ability to switch pretty much everything at this point right now, not even just right now, like this is what they're doing, right? They're switching pretty much everything if they want to. The ability to feel comfortable with, hey, man, we've got three guys who are about 6'7", who we feel comfortable switching on to really any one matchup. Yes, we'll give up some size to a guy like Giannis Antetokounmpo, but we'll be able, and Al Horford has done a good job on him in the past defensively. Robert Williams is going to be a pretty intriguing piece, just hovering around in the corner when you're talking about guarding guys like Bobby Portis, because he'll be, again, defensively more off ball and be able to help in certain situations, especially when Giannis is driving to the basket and he's going into one of the one-on-one matchups. You'll probably see more of that scheme that we talked about in those years past, right, where Toronto was building the wall against Giannis Antetokounmpo and two or three guys crashing in and forcing the rest of them to win their one-on-one matchups. I like everything that Boston brings to the table. I said this the other day. The Celtics, to me, are the best team in the Eastern Conference right now, especially with this Middleton injury. Everything that this team has to offer. And then you get to the flip side of it, which is the Milwaukee Bucks defensively. The Milwaukee Bucks drove me crazy in those first two games because they were just casually going out there and, again, running their drop coverage. And the problem was, especially in that second game against Chicago, DeMar DeRozan was just walking into long mid-range jumpers. That's part of his game. And they were running pick and pops with Nikola Vucevic. Why it didn't work for Chicago was that Chicago did not take advantage of what is given to you when you're consistently facing drop coverage. The Celtics are going to run pick and pops, and they'll shoot three-pointers. The Celtics, if the guy is going to drop off in the pick and roll, if it's going to be Brook Lopez or Giannis when he's playing the five, which the Bucks did that a couple of times against Chicago. I didn't really understand playing drop coverage with Giannis at center. The whole point of him playing center is that you can switch pretty much everything when he's out there on the floor with the rest of the guys. But against those coverages, the Celtics have the personnel to eat that up. They're going to kick it out to open shooters. They're going to run pick and pops and kill them in drop coverage. If they're going to drop and, you know, effectively cover the guy who's going to flare out to the three-point line, Jason Tatum is a perfectly comfortable mid-range scorer. Jaylen Brown is a perfectly comfortable mid-range scorer. They're going to be able to offer that. Al Horford is a very good three-point shooter for a big who's going to be able to take advantage of him on those pick-and-pop matchups. Like, that's going to be something where Milwaukee's going to have to make that adjustment defensively, and they're going to have to make it quick. They're going to go back. They got to go back to those defensive schemes they were running against the Phoenix Suns and near the end of their series in the Eastern Conference Finals last year, where they were not only playing more Giannis at the five, but they were switching much more. And it bothered me watching what they were doing at the beginning of the series against Chicago. And again, it's the Bulls. It's a team that you picked. It's a team that you match up really well against and that you were kind of getting through the motions. But without Chris Middleton, your effort defensively is going to have to be much better. And that's the other thing, too. I mean, the Boston Celtics, they'll be comfortable hunting certain guys too. Bobby Portis, when he's out there, they have some size and guys like Wes Matthews too. I think there's so many things that work in the favor of Boston right now that I'm comfortable playing them in this series. I'm really curious though what the betting market does with a price like this. You have the defending champs, and granted, look, they're the lower seed, so they don't have home court. They don't have one of their best players. We have the defending champs at a price that's nearly, what, plus 155, plus 160. How the market handles this, but I think the Celtics are going to be the side to back here. We saw the initial push from the market up to minus 180. That's a sharp move. That's a respected move. You're not going to, you know, books aren't going to move a series price like that 5 cents. And it's only 5 cents, some would say, but still, you're not going to move a price like that early for nothing. So there was a read in the market or somebody bet it that was respected enough to push it up just the 5 cents. But still, I like Boston here. and I have this ticket on him. I hope, hopefully you guys were listening to the podcast all those months ago when we added the Boston Celtics at 66-1 over at BetMGM to win the NBA Finals. This team is really freaking good, and they have a lot of really good depth, and I think they're going to win this series against the Milwaukee Bucks. So I'm going to see what the market does. Got until Sunday to play it, but I will be betting on the Boston Celtics to win this series against the Milwaukee Bucks.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret, like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Now let's go to Thursday. Man. I am so excited about what is going to happen. I was talking about this with Gil Alexander when he had me on Primetime Action. Man, did the NBA screw this up? Sorry, you hear me hitting my chair. To have this, and I guess you can't really foresee this to a certain extent, but like to have three games on the day of the NFL draft, and one of those games, the drama that will be in Toronto, for Philly and Toronto, game six, is going to be incredible. It is going to be one of the best playoff environments, I'm hoping at least, it's going to be one of the best playoff environments that I've seen in a really long time. It's going to be freaking awesome. But let's talk about this. Philly opens up a 1.5-point favorite, total of 209.5. As of this recording Wednesday night, it's still sitting there right now. So let's talk about what's gone wrong for Philly up to this point. So first, you got to start with the offense. It's completely disappeared. Toronto has held the 76ers to 102.4 points per 100 possessions overall. 102.1 in non-garbage time over the last three games. So not a big difference. It hasn't been a lot of garbage time in the last three games anyway. They have a defensive turnover rate, Toronto does, of 19.9%. Think about that. Pretty much 20% of the offensive possessions for the Philadelphia 76ers have turned into turnovers. Those turnovers then have turned into offense for Toronto. Transition off of steals for the Toronto Raptors over the last three games. They've added 4.4 points per 100 possessions to their offensive rating, 182.4 points per 100 plays in terms of their transition offensive efficiency. They have been brilliant in terms of defending, forcing turnovers, and using those turnovers and shifting this and tilting the floor, put it that way, and turning it into offense. And the other thing, too, is if you remember those first two games, Philadelphia was just this whirlwind of transition offense out of nowhere. A team that finished in the bottom half of the league in transition efficiency in terms of frequency of transition was all of a sudden running up and down the floor, putting up offensive ratings of like 180 or whatever it was in the first two games in transition. The Philadelphia 76ers have been completely cut off in transition. Over the last three games, they have actually lost. They have taken away from their offensive rating in transition. Negative 0.4 in terms of points added per 100 possessions in transition. And in terms of points per 100 plays in transition, just 100. It has been the Toronto Raptors and what they've done defensively in transition. And part of it, too, has been limiting the turnovers, because a lot of the transition opportunities in the first two games for Toronto were committing turnovers. They have cut that down a little bit, and that has been a big reason why. But Toronto's been brilliant in their transition defense, and they have been a top team defensively and offensively in transition. They've completely turned that around. They deserve so much credit for, and they've made adjustments here, but what they have been able to do in terms of just limiting the mistakes and playing more their brand of basketball, like, this is what we talked about in the series preview. This is what I had hung my hat on in terms of the Philadelphia 76ers having an issue with the Toronto Raptors. The difference in transition, I thought, was going to be a really big part of this, and over the last three games, it has played out that way. And the thing that sucks for the Toronto Raptors is one of those three games is the one at the end where Precious Achiuwa doesn't hit his free throws, and they end up losing in overtime in that amazing shot from Joel Embiid. So I think that's the first part. The offense has disappeared for Philadelphia. Toronto has really taken advantage. They've been forcing turnovers, getting out in transition, and scoring in transition. Also, passive and ineffective Harden has shown up as well. Harden the last two games, just 18.5 points per game, 32.1% from the floor, 28.6% from three, 8 assists and 3.5 rebounds. So not only has passive Harden showed up, but I guess like sometimes passive Harden will at least give you 12 to 15 assists per game. Not only that, not even that, just 8 for Harden in these last two games. He's 3 of 7 in the last two games in the restricted area. He's been to the free throw line only 17 times over those two games. So he's not forcing the issue within 4 feet. He's relying on those step back threes. He's not getting to the free throw line as often. And Maxey has completely come off of the high the first two games, and over the last three, averaging 14 points on 38% shooting from the floor, 18% shooting from three, 4 rebounds, 3.7 assists. It's been a complete turnaround for this Raptors defense, and they're so good on that end of the floor. They really are. If you just watch them, the rotations are clean and crisp. They close out on shooters. Guys know exactly where to go when a guy helps off of another dude. They are so effective on that end of the floor. And every time Joel Embiid catches the ball in the middle of the paint, there are three Raptors there immediately, forcing the ball out of Joel Embiid's hands or forcing him to try to get up through contact with that hand injury that he's dealing with. I have been so impressed with Toronto over the last couple of games. And this is going to be an incredible environment. And I will say, we have the looming specter of the absence of Matisse Thybulle. I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore, mainly because in that last game, Matisse Thybulle just couldn't play. He couldn't play offensively. He's an absolute negative on the offensive end of the floor. The Raptors were so brilliant when he was out there on the floor, just completely ignoring him essentially on offense, letting him shoot threes if he wanted to, letting him catch it uncontested, not really closing out. They played that brilliantly. And without him on the floor, actually, it might make the Toronto Raptors' job a little bit harder. Now, defense, just because now they have to account for all of the guys out there. But still, I mean, on the other end, Toronto's going to have one less good defender on the floor. So could work. It's obviously going to be one that works out either way. And then you just get this. And look, I am one that is big on data and analysis and all these things. But you have what happened last year with the Atlanta Hawks in the postseason. And you have Doc Rivers coming out the other day in a massive defense of himself with these blown 3-1 leads, throwing his Orlando Magic team under the bus completely, saying, look at the roster. You see that? It was amazing they were up 3-1 over Detroit. I just think that this has shifted completely in terms of momentum, obviously, but this is now a giant, like, mental thing for the Philadelphia 76ers, watching this go down again. Losing two consecutive games, barely getting by in game three, then losing two straight, losing comfortably on your own home court. Now to go back into this environment to save off a game seven winner take all back in Philly. Your crowd is booing you in game five. It's just a really tough situation for the 76ers. I think the Raptors are going to extend this out. I think the Raptors win tomorrow or Thursday, whenever you're listening to this. I think what they've done in transition, the changes they've made, the better effort defensively, and even without Fred VanVleet, they have enough there with Scottie Barnes back, I think, to make this thing a real series and force a game seven. This is going to be one of the best playoff games of the postseason this year. It is, just flat out. I cannot wait. So give me the Raptors here in that game. I'm not going to bet it. Personally, I'm going to wait in game and see if maybe I can get Philly at a plus price, something like that. Not Philly. That was my strategy for game seven. If they force a game seven, I misspoke. If they force a game seven, then I'm going to look to get Philly at a plus price. Hopefully Toronto gets off to a good lead in the game seven so that I can get something. I can hedge a little bit on this Toronto series price that I got going. But this is why. I don't mean to yell, but this is why, okay, to the guy out there who sent me like 13 consecutive tweets telling me I needed to explain and apologize for the Toronto Raptors pick, which, by the way, we talk about all the time. This is why you never celebrate too early. Even when it's a 3-0 series lead, it's why you never celebrate too early. So again, look, Philly could come out, everybody turns everything around, they end the series in six and they move on. But what Toronto's been able to do here has been great, and I think the environment really plays out for them tomorrow, so I think they're going to win that game and force a game seven.
There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel... It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
All right, let's go to the next matchup here that we're going to talk about. Let's talk a little bit about the New Orleans Pelicans and Phoenix Suns series, because this has turned out to be a fun one. New Orleans falls 3-2 in the series, falls down to 3-2 in the series after losing the other game in Phoenix. And it's kind of weird, man, because this is sometimes in basketball, it's almost as simple as this. And I brought this up when it came to Denver, and you finally got this like surge in terms of the role players for the Phoenix Suns when they went back home. Mainly it was Mikal Bridges. Mikal Bridges was awesome. 31 points, 12 of 17 from the floor, 4 of 4 from three-point range. And that was really what made the difference. You did get more effective outings from certain guys. Like Campaign hit 2 of his three-point shots. He scored 12 points. But as we move back to New Orleans, the thing to watch here is going to be, again, it's always going to be, in this series, at least as long as it continues, it's going to be the small lineups, specifically when Larry Nance Jr. is out there as the biggest guy, because that has given them problems, how they handle that those lineups and how they handle it in transition. If you looked at this last game between these two, New Orleans was terrible in transition. A negative 1.4 in terms of points added per 100 possessions. Points per play, 87.5. Again, just essentially just think of that as overall offensive efficiency in transition. Not very good. And it's not like New Orleans has been running up and down the floor a bunch. Actually, in terms of transition frequency, it's been pretty low for them in this series up to this point, 11.6% of their possessions starting with a transition play. But they've just been really effective in those in that area of the floor. Added 3 points per 100 possessions through transition offense so far through the series. That's including this awful performance that they just had. 136.8 in terms of the overall offensive rating. So transition, those smaller lineups, but Larry Nance on the floor in game five, a negative 10 or minus 10 in terms of plus minus. They were plus 12 in the two games in New Orleans with Larry Nance out there on the floor. So I think what bothers me here about what transpired in that game for Phoenix, it's just that you just had that outlier performance, right? Like I mentioned, the somewhat better numbers from Campaign, but he still wasn't overly efficient from the floor. Is Mikal Bridges going to come in and all of a sudden score 30 plus points again? Because that's what they desperately need. I mean, other than Chris Paul going nuts in the fourth quarter of game three, game four, I mean, nobody else had anything. We can talk about Chris Paul we want, but it's about the fact that he had no help in game four in New Orleans. That was the really big problem. When you looked at it, those bench minutes and units are just so bad. When you have like Cameron Payne and Torrey Craig and Cam Johnson on the floor together with a JaVale McGee, like it's not a good looking lineup overall. There's not a lot of scoring. They're running plays for Torrey Craig, who's not really a scorer as we know. But just go back to that game on the 24th, right? That was game four that they lost and the series got tied up. If you look outside of the starters, and even some of the starters weren't that effective, but again, like Landry Shamet, 3 of 5, 7 points in that game. Campaign, 8 points, 3 of 10 from the floor. Torrey Craig, 3 points, 1 of 4 from the floor. Those issues with the bench are still going to be there because it doesn't seem like Devin Booker's coming back anytime soon. In fact, let's listen to Woj here. Adrian Wojnarowski, again, on NBA Today, talked about this. And I guess the Suns aren't really, like, giving up on the fact that he could be Devin Booker available for this series, specifically this game. But it does sound like, more than likely, it's going to be something else.
The Suns have been careful to not rule Devin Booker out of this series. They've really tried to handle publicly anyway his absence on a game-by-game basis. The original timeline, the expectation we were told was 2 to 3 weeks, but perhaps 2 weeks, that it would be potentially into a second-round series before he'd be ready to come back. And in a perfect world for the Suns, they'd be able to close this series out, obviously, in Game 6. They've got two chances to do it in Game 6 or Game 7. They've not ruled Booker out of either of those games yet, but it still feels as though, Malika, that this is an injury that Devin Booker would be able to return from sometime in the conference semifinals.
Yeah, sometime in the conference semifinals. And that makes more sense. So I say all this to say that I'm not entirely sure. I don't think, when I watched that game the other day, I don't think the Suns found something. I don't think there was some elixir, some adjustment that they found that helped them deal with the small lineups of New Orleans. To me, I just watched a team that got a better performance from one of the role players. And if they get that in game six, they can certainly close that game out. They're more than capable of doing it. And I still think that they win this series. But what worries me about, like, laying it on the road and thinking that they're going to be able to take care of business here, I think you're just going to get a similar game to games 3 and 4, which were uber competitive, which they had a really tough time pulling away from New Orleans, eventually lost game 4, as we know. I think these games are going to take on that more of that shape than what we just saw, what we just saw transpire over in Phoenix. So I had a really strong lean to New Orleans in this game tomorrow. I haven't made a play. I want to see where the line gets to. In terms of right now, it's at 1.5 in favor of Phoenix. That's not really worth playing, I think, in my mind, in terms of taking 1.5 or the money line. Want to see what the market does with a number like that. I have a feeling they'll probably drive it up. I mean, you're looking at it right now. It's already up to 2 in multiple spots. BetMGM's got 2.5. They're always a little high on the market. So we will see where this eventually ends up. But sharper books like Westgate and like Circa are up to 2. So you'd expect that that's probably the direction we get to. So if it's a full 3, grab it there with the New Orleans Pelicans. But very much interested in that game and in that series because that's been a damn fun one. On to the final game for Thursday, Dallas-Utah. Keep this relatively short. I mean, I got a play here, but it's nothing that's of value to anybody. I grabbed 2.5 the other day with Dallas because I figured the market was going to move on that. Certainly it has. But as far as this game goes, you know, again, when I was texting with Jeff Sherman over at the Westgate, I told him that I figured they would open at 2.5 in favor of Utah, just given the swing back. Home and the fact that the market does seem to overvalue Utah a little bit, the fact that the market likes to bet on the team that just lost the previous game as well. So thought that was going to be ultimately the case, but it opened 2.5 in favor of Dallas. That was ridiculous, and that was because they thought Donovan Mitchell wasn't going to play. And can I just stress this to anybody who's listening to this right now? Don't be afraid. Like, this was my strategy because I think Dallas is very much in position to win this game. Think they will. I like this Dallas team a lot. I have been surprised by the market's rating of Utah in this series. But having said that, you know, keep an eye on these numbers and how this market reacts to certain things, because in this series alone, there's been some weird handling of information and news. So we'll start with game four in Utah, right? So all of the indications for that game was that Luka Doncic was going to play in that game. Everything that I read, the reports, all pointed to game four. There was a report even that Tim McMahon put out there that Doncic had been playing 4-on-4, no pain, was looking like he was going to be ready to go. But it's weird because for that game, market opens 5, gets to 6, closes 5.5 when Doncic is officially announced. That's despite the fact that for game 3, when Doncic didn't play, that number was sitting at 7, and when it's officially announced he's out, it goes to 8.5. Now, that's a really bad number, and I even played a bad number in that game, and obviously they got there because they won that. But I just talk about the weird way that the market has handled these injuries and this news that is like that is out there. And then for this game, for example, those 2.5s were out there for a while. And that was despite the report that Donovan Mitchell's hamstring was, the MRI came back negative, and that he was coming out and saying that he was going to play. So when it's officially announced that he's going to play, we're still floating around this pick minus one range. I'd expect that the Jazz would be about a 1.5-point favorite by the time this closes. But at the end of the day, when you look at what the Dallas Mavericks have done in this series over the last couple of games, their ability to take advantage of this poor perimeter defense of the Utah Jazz, getting dribble penetration, kicking it out to open shooters, and their ability on defense. This has been the biggest thing, because we can talk ad nauseum about how Dallas is taking advantage of that defense, of Utah's defense. But the way Dallas is playing on their own defensive end has been absolutely incredible. Limiting what Utah wants to do from three-point range in non-garbage time minutes of game 5. And so this cut out the last 4 minutes and 40 seconds of that game. The Jazz went 3 of 27 from three-point range. It's been incredible. This entire series, the ability to limit Utah, run them off the three-point line, not allow them to take those three-point shots. I have to say, and I got to go back and read what I wrote about Jason Kidd and the Dallas Mavericks before the series started. I know in the guide I took them over the win total. But Kidd has amazed me. I think, and it's just like these players, these kids, that come in early into the league, they don't show a lot of promise, and teams give up on them or fans give up on them. You know, you can adjust. You can change as a player, obviously, especially when you come in young. And Jason Kidd has clearly shown coaches change and adjust their philosophies, and they can become better coaches. And he's done a brilliant job in terms of this team and getting the most out of them, in terms of coaching this team and getting the most out of them defensively. But if you just look at what they have forced the Jazz to do in terms of not allowing them to take those three-point shots, not allowing them to be comfortable on the three-point line, limiting them in terms of the accuracy. I mean, look at the three-point shooting for this series. 33.3% in game 1, 32.1% in game 3, 28.6% in game 4, 11.1% in game 5. It's been brilliant watching this team operate on that end. And that hasn't changed throughout this entire series. Luka Doncic or not, that hasn't changed. And the weaknesses on the other end of the floor, they're not going to go anywhere. So do you get a razzed up Utah Jazz crowd that pushes them to a potential victory? Maybe. But I think they deserve to be favored on their home court by about 1.5 in that range, especially in a playoff setting and a potential elimination setting at that. But this defense isn't going anywhere for the Dallas Mavericks. And I think they're going to win, and they're going to move on. They're going to win this series and move on. Maybe not tomorrow. Again, I make the Jazz a slight favorite, have a slight lean toward the Mavericks winning that game. The only reason I have plus 2.5 is because it was a number grab figuring the market would move and I can set up a middle or do something with it, and that has been the case. But boy, oh boy, man, it is hard not to be impressed with the Dallas Mavericks. Very hard not to be impressed with the Dallas Mavericks. All right, so this is going to be a short one. Hopefully, again, and you know, really trying to work out the kinks on the back end here in terms of everything going on with posting this on the website. The last couple of podcasts have not been reaching the usual audience, it seems. So hopefully you're listening to my voice because, yeah, NBA's fun, and this has been a lot of fun, and this postseason is going to be absolutely great. Anyway, this will be short. Again, VSiN.com/JVT. Keep your eye up there because we're writing every single day for the daily market reports. Really hope you guys have been enjoying those. Got some good feedback on those. Those are a lot of fun to write too. And this is kind of the bummer part, because now we're going to start to get into the, where these series move on. You know, we had only two games on Wednesday night, and the second game turned out to be a lot of fun, but two games of two prohibitive favorites, and you know, it's just the schedule's going to start lighting up here in the next couple of weeks, and it kind of gets you a little bummed out, but it's been good playoff basketball. At me, JBT, up on Twitter. Hope to hear from you guys, and hope you guys have been having a good postseason, man.
At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts. If you dare.
Xumo Play is your destination for endless entertainment. With a diverse lineup of 350-plus live channels, movies, and full TV series, you'll easily find something to watch right away. And the best part? It's all free. Love music? Get lost in the 90s with iHeart 90s, dance away with hip-hop beats, and more on the iHeart Radio music channels. No logins, no signups, no accounts, no hassle. So what are you waiting for? Start streaming at play.xumo.com or download from the app and Google Play stores today. All you can stream with Xumo Play.